Coming up on KUCB News, fishing towns stand to forfeit millions of dollars under the governor's budget proposal, and an Unalaska resident is vying to open a local bakery. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Tuesday, February 19th, 2019. Five people were rescued safely from a life raft in the Bering Sea Friday after their fishing vessel sank about 40 miles west-southwest of Unalaska. The FE Pacific One first sent a distress signal to another commercial fishing vessel, the Kona Kai, which in turn relayed the message to the U.S. Coast Guard. That's according to Petty Officer Lauren Dean.
Was reported to be taking on water, listing heavily with five people aboard.
Dean says the Coast Guard launched two helicopter crews from Cold Bay to search for the Pacific One. By the time they arrived, the vessel had sunk and its crew had abandoned ship.
The Coast Guard air crew was able to locate the raft with all five people aboard, but due to an in-flight problem, they had to deploy a data marker buoy, and then they had to unfortunately return back to the base.
Dean did not specify the helicopter's problem, but she says the Good Samaritan vessel Kona Kai was close enough to follow the marker buoy it had left behind. The vessel found the raft, brought all five people on board, and transported them to Unalaska in, quote, good condition. Now Dean says the Coast Guard is trying to figure out why the Pacific One sank.
That is going to be under investigation. We do not know why the boat went down.
It appears the Pacific One sinking marks the first vessel loss of the winter fishing season, though Dean could not immediately confirm. The Coast Guard also rescued an injured mariner yesterday from a fishing vessel north of St. Paul. Officials say the FE Carrie Marie was about 200 miles north of the island when a crew member suffered a compound fracture, though they did not specify where. Another vessel, the FE Pacific Mariner, relayed the message to the U.S. Coast Guard, which sent a Jayhawk helicopter crew to medevac the man to St. Paul. Officials say he received treatment at the island's clinic and is in stable condition. Governor Mike Dunleavy's proposals for balancing the state's budget include a plan to stop sharing millions of dollars in taxes on commercial fishing with coastal communities. Matt Shuckero is the governor's press secretary.
The governor's budget is the message he's sending is that we're out of time and we're out of money.
The state collects landing and business taxes on fisheries, often referred to as raw fish tax. Half of the revenue is shared with the city or the borough where the fish is received and processed. But Shuckero says ending that revenue sharing would save the state about $28 million.
That requires legislation, so you'll see legislation introduced in the coming days to support the proposal that's in the budget, and that would be to remove the tax sharing of fisheries businesses' resources for municipalities.
That state cost savings would largely be at the expense of communities with seafood economies. For instance, the city of Cordova boasts the largest commercial fishing fleet in Alaska. And right now, Mayor Clay Copeland says the community of 2,300 people operates on a lean $10 million budget.
We were operating on a $12 million a year budget, and we made significant cuts, largely in response to prior cuts by the state.
Fish tax revenue covers more than 11% of Cordova's expenses, and while its seafood sector has been growing rapidly as one of the top 20 ports in the nation, Copeland says he worries about losing such a huge chunk of revenue under the governor's proposal.
We're on a good trajectory. This is just like putting the brakes on, taking that local revenue to keep us supporting and growing our economy. As it will be devastating, frankly.
The city of Unalaska would also take a big financial hit if the state stops its revenue sharing. According to recent projections, Unalaska is expecting to receive about $8.3 million in the next fiscal year from its share of fisheries business and resource landing taxes. That is about 27% of the city's projected revenue. City Manager Thomas E. Thomas declined to comment on the fish tax issue last week, saying local officials are still reviewing the governor's proposal.
We're assessing as we go through and we identify where we got funding from this, how this impacts. So we're going through it as we read it and then things could change. This is just a proposed budget. As it goes through the legislative process, things get put back in, but a lot of things are up in the air now. This is a very different approach to they're taking with the budget this year.
In that vein, the Dunleavy administration has also proposed cutting 3/4 of the state's ferry system. Such deep cuts could potentially cripple the service before the end of the year, as well as eliminate the Tustamina route between Unalaska and Homer. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick has more on how civil leaders in the ferry-centric Southeast are reacting to the news.
Twice a year, Southeast Conference brings together civic and business leaders from the region. It's usually a chance for the ferry system's chief to check in with leaders from smaller communities. At Wednesday's meeting, a resident of Cake stands up. He's upset about cost overruns of the Alaska-class ferries and the ferry's inability to serve smaller docks without even more costly retrofits.
You had all your people down in Ketchikan, yet they couldn't figure out there that they were building something wrong there, right there at the yard. I mean, it seemed like somebody should have been paying attention.
Speaking is Delbert Kadake, head of Cake's Tribal Fuel Company. He's addressing Shirley Marquardt, the Alaska Marine Highway System's executive director. As he finishes upbraiding ferry management, his tone lightens.
I appreciate what you're doing there, Shirley. I'm not trying to get mad or anything. I just want to speak up for our community because we do need help in our little communities.
Such is the love-hate relationship in coastal communities with state ferries. Cost-cutting has meant less service, more breakdowns and delays, which in turn hurts ridership and revenues. Low ridership is one of the justifications made by Governor Mike Dunleavy's budget czar for even steeper cuts. Budget Director Donna Ardoin told Capitol reporters in Juneau that state-subsidized ferries aren't cost-effective.
For example, the cost to transport a vehicle on a state highway is about 2 cents per mile, where it's about $4.58 per mile on a ferry.
That comparison doesn't square. All but 5 of the 33 Alaska communities served by the ferry are off the road system. For them, it is the highway. It's how people bring vehicles in, seafood is exported, sports teams travel. Gary White heads Sitka's Economic Development Association. His city's on Baranoff Island. He says the ferry's a lifeline.
This is going to have a far-reaching impact for not only business, for the cultural, for the social impacts, and for the economic benefits of all our communities.
The governor's long-term plan goes further. Ardoin told reporters the governor penned an order to study divesting from the ferry system entirely.
We have proposals to look at privatization, for example, in the marine highway system. We're in the process of bringing on a marine consultant to talk about all of the options that are available. That may be one of them.
But civic leaders in Southeast are skeptical that could work.
There's not one public ferry system in the world that operates 100% off the fare box. It just doesn't exist. And, you know, you can have consultants study things and, you know, it doesn't necessarily you're going to get the answer you want.
That's David Kensinger, head of Petersburg's Chamber of Commerce. He's also part of the Ferry Reform Committee that studied ferry governance models around the world. Efforts to depoliticize ferry system management are not new.
This organization, all of us around the region, have tried for years to change how the ferry system operates. And every time you get a new governor, well, you get a new change.
The Reform Committee is championing legislation to turn the Marine Highway into a public corporation. That 2-year effort wasn't mentioned by the governor's office. But Kensinger said they hope to work together.
He doesn't have to pay a new consultant. He can just take a look at it, and we're open to engage him in discussions on it.
More concerning to this group is further cost-cutting. The Dunleavy administration touts its cuts would save around $96 million. But how the ferry system would survive the year isn't clear. Alaska Marine Highway System officials referred all questions back to the governor's budget office. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The Alaska Marine Highway System is just one of many core services that state lawmakers will be tussling over in the coming weeks. We will bring you continued coverage as the budget debate unfolds in Juneau, starting tomorrow with more on Dunleavy's proposal to cut funding from the Department of Corrections by about $19 million. Every year, the Aleutian and Pribilof Island Community Development Association awards grants to aspiring entrepreneurs from the region. Current and former residents may apply, but their businesses must be located in one of the 12 Aleutian and Pribilof communities. APICTA chooses three finalists who then compete for funding to kickstart their projects, and they stand to win between $3,000 and $10,000. So over the next 3 days, we'll hear from this year's batch of finalists who have proposed businesses in Unalaska and Akutan. KUCB Zoe Sobel sat down first with Unalaska resident Carlos Tayag to hear why he wants to open a bakery.
At this point, I feel like I've been cooking my entire life. Before I came here, I worked in a handful of restaurants. I was involved in large-scale catering and bartending, so I've kind of done a lot in the restaurant industry. I wouldn't consider myself a real expert in the world of the culinary arts, but I think I know enough and I like to learn. So I spend a lot of my free time cooking and testing recipes and baking bread, and bread which I think that people like.
And so tell me a little bit about your application to the Aleutian Marketplace competition. What are you proposing?
What I'm proposing is a artisan bakery here on the island, because we don't really have access to that. There's a few cafes and there's places to eat, but I think it's just nice to have something that's local and handmade here on the island that people can access to. And on a little bit of a larger scale, I would like to go beyond bread and have, you know, bread, desserts, bagels, pastries, soup, salads, those types of things.
Yeah, I understand you're quite the master of creme brulee.
That's how I became famous on the island as a chef, was from my creme brulee. And I decided, I actually started baking so that people would stop asking me for creme brulee and they would maybe start asking me for other things that I can also cook.
So do you think that's true? People have found out that, like, oh, actually Carlos can make just more than this one thing?
Yes. The Parks, Culture, and Recreation Department last summer, the summer of 2018, had a series of artisan markets throughout the summer. I baked 30 to 40 loaves of bread, and I sold out every time I sold them, which was a pretty clear indication that people enjoyed my bread.
This is obviously a competition. There's some money attached now that you're a finalist, whether you come in first, second, or third. How would the funding allow you to pursue this business?
The money would probably go towards renting retail space somewhere on the island, wherever that is, and kind of putting together a kitchen, having it inspected so that I can cook in it and I can serve food out of the kitchen. And I'm not looking for anything large scale. I think the money would just allow me to continue to grow my business and kickstart the sea glass bakery idea.
So why does Unalaska need sea glass bakery? What would it bring to the community?
I think that there's a need for more local businesses. I think small businesses are important to the economy. I think local businesses are important to the health of the community. The bigger dream would be to have people be able to come in to the bakery for open mic nights and, you know, other meetings or activities, and just a space for people to hang out. The other thing that I think is important is, with more local business, it, you know, even if it's just one or two, it provides more local jobs to people. So, you know, if I can teach some people how to bake and then they go off into the world and work in the restaurant industry somewhere else, I think that would be pretty cool.
And where does the name come from?
Oh, Sea Glass Bakery is something that I thought of because I like the ocean theme and like the treasure theme. And there's a lot of people here who hunt for sea glass, and it's kind of like a little hidden treasure that people like to find on the island. So I like the idea of the Sea Glass Bakery being a hidden treasure, you know, kind of a diamond in the rough that you can find in Unalaska. Maybe something unexpected but happy.
That was Carlos Tayag of Unalaska speaking with KUCB's Zoe Sobel. Tomorrow we'll hear from finalist Travis Swangel about his business plan for bike rentals. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. We'll be right back.